Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic, episode number 703. And am I going to get down to talking about true liberty? I don't know. I'm tempted just to say no. I'll probably be talking about something else. And I was just listening to the radio, pundits getting on and saying, we can fix this! We can fix this nation! We can fix the government! If you'll just give us enough power, we'll do it! And I don't believe them. I don't trust them. You know, how come they didn't fix government last year? Or the year before? Or 10 years ago? Or 20? People are screaming about how government didn't work 50 years ago. 50! And have they changed things? For the better? No. You know, government has gotten progressively worse and worse and worse. Giving power to people in Congress or the president or whoever has admitted nothing. Because the problem isn't that they don't have enough power. The problem is they have no will. But also, they don't know what to do. Who wants to make a huge change that ends up being a huge mistake and then, you know, wants to be blamed for it? Who wants to do that? Do you want to do that? Do you want to be the guy that makes that happen? I don't think so. I don't think I want to be that guy. But, so this is what I say. We should abandon the government of the United States of America. We should abandon it. The miracle of America, or what we would have hoped would have been the miracle of America, wasn't its location. It wasn't the fact that it has the borders it has now. It wasn't, it wasn't any of those things, you know. The magic isn't that there were 13 colonies, you know, and we grew from that. None of that stuff was the magic. The magic was the whole attitude. The whole attitude of, we're breaking with the past. We're going to do something different. We're actually going to respect people and give people as much latitude as we think we can. Those who say, oh no, we can't have another revolution. We're not ready to have another revolution. That's just too drastic. That's just too wild. We won't do it. You know, we can reform this. We can fix this. And you go, in what universe would that be true? Too many people like their little bit of corruption. Too many people like their, you know, their little bits of special interest perk, you know. And when you get a whole bunch of people together that have decided that, you know, this is, I like this, this, and this, you can throw away all the rest, but then when you spread it out among all the people, every single bit, every single little perk, every single little particle of it wants really to be kept. And it's a huge bloodletting to get rid of any of it. You can always tack on more, you know. You can always try to adjust things. Because, you know, if enough people start screaming, you have a problem. You know, the whole method of governance in the United States of America right now is to avoid riot. Now, I think it's pretty true everywhere else, too. You know, you only change the way things are when a certain group, you know, for only two reasons. When you're trying to keep from getting lynched, and when you're trying to curry favor. That's really the only two reasons that you make any adjustments to anything. You know, people say, well, government's broken. Well, that's the first people, boy, that's the first we ever heard of that. And you go, what? What crap is that? Of course it's broke. It's been broken for years. It's been broken for centuries, practically. It wasn't even fixed when it started. They almost immediately started passing bills to make life miserable for people. To reward their friends, to punish their enemies. You know, that's what government's for. Can I use force to make myself richer and to kill those who I don't like? That's pretty much perfect. That's how government's currently done. Anyway. No. I'm going to go for... Here's a different philosophy for you to chew over, think about, see what you want to do. I say we abandon America. I don't mean literally leave it. I've been tempted to in the past, but, you know, what's the point? What would I abandon it for? You know, I say, well, the greatest nation on God's green earth. I go, no, it's not. I said, well, boy, is that a relative statement. All the nations suck. You're just hoping that our nation sucks less. And you go, I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. I don't care about the relativism. Is it right? No. I said, well, then we need to change it. And you go, but there's no political will to change it. And then you go, well, then we have to either revolt or secede. Or just stop. And say, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to, you know, all this stuff about getting so excited about your candidate, you know, and it's a big it's patriotic to vote for your candidate. Now, when your candidate loses, you get sad and angry and you bitch about it the whole time, you know. Until the next election comes up, you find some new person to get all teary-eyed and starry-eyed about. And it's like, what the heck's going on here, type business. I'm sorry, I just looked at my email and nothing important, that's for sure. Behind somebody who insists on going 20 miles an hour, 45 mile an hour zone, it's actually a highway. This is crazy. Oh, they just pulled over so I could get ahead of them. That's interesting. Look, that person's capable of driving. I think they're stone drunk or something. Because he's going 15 miles an hour on a highway. Unfortunately, it's a highway that's got too many curves. No, it doesn't matter. Okay. What do you think about the whole idea about just abandoning America? And the whole question is, are they going to let you do it? You know, are they just going to stand by and watch while you just say, I'm not participating in this anymore? Or are they going to put up a fight and say, no, no, you can't do that? And you go, oh, well, then it's your choice. It's your choice what we're going to do. Is there going to be a bloody revolution? Or are you just going to say, well, whatever. You know, is it about tyranny? Are you going to tyrannize? By saying, no, no, you can't do what you want, you can't leave, we need your tax money. You know, then you go, oh, I know what I am now. I'm Mr. Moneybags. You know, my usefulness in being a part of the United States is is based on how much money you can extort from me. Says, well, then I'll treat you like I would any other extortionist. I'll fight you. You know, you can have this run any way you want to. Says, but you know what? Says, the fact that it's being abandoned, it's kind of like when your washing machine just doesn't work. You know, I mean, it still spins, water still goes in and goes out, but clothes aren't getting cleaner. The whole purpose for a washing machine doesn't work. I mean, all the parts are there. You know, it draws power, it plugs into the wall, you know, it hooks up to your water. You know, it does all the things you would expect a washing machine to do, but what ultimately comes out isn't clean clothes. You know, they're just as dirty and slimy and mucky as they were before. If you had such a washing machine, what would you do with it? Would you continue fussing and fretting over it? And saying, well, we need to do that. Because you have to understand, government's a lot like a washing machine. You know, I guess you can technically add new little attachments, new little doodads to it to try to make you still like it. And I don't get that. You know, our politicians act like, you know, every day people are moving away from the United States because they can't stand it anymore. They keep doing a total, you know, they behave like, you know, it's a sales job. Well, you know, you need to still love America, and I'll make sure it happens. And it's like, what? This is where I live, and I'm not moving. I want you to fix things. Oh, no, we're doing a sales job on you. The whole job isn't to have, you know... I guess it comes from a world where people have got expect not to get what they want. They ask for something, they get something else, and everybody just kind of groans and moans and gets upset. They even call a select committee to air our grievances about what... You know, what's not happening? You know, it's like somebody says, I want a washing machine that actually washes clothes, and they come out cleaner than when they went in. And, you know, the manufacturer comes back with a new digital display that's really cool. I said, ooh, this is so cool. You'll love the new display. It makes washing clothes so much better. You'll like it so much better. But it's like, but that's not what I asked for. I mean, cool, it's cool. I mean, yeah, but, you know, it's still the same washing machine with the same, that doesn't get clothes clean. I put it in. It churns things around a bit. I pull it out. It's dirty. You know? What's confusing about it? So you throw out that wash machine and you get a new one. Now, you could say that in relation to, okay, fine, all the voters need to decide that they don't like this kind of a government and they all need to get together and vote out all the bums we've got now and get all new bums. And you go, but you know what? That's not going to happen. You know, because I guess on this style of washing machine, there's a whole lot of people that just really don't care if the thing cleans clothes or not. They like some of the other features. You know, they like, you know, the electronic touch panel. They're used to having washing machines that don't really wash clothes. Heck, they've come up with their own system to wash them in the sink instead, after you put them through the washing machine. We have whole things like that. I think they're so funny. A dishwasher is kind of like that. You essentially have to almost wash a dish before you stick it in the dishwasher, all it ends up being is some really involved sort of sanitizer. And nobody really cares if the dishes are sanitized. I haven't heard about the myriad of deaths coming from dirty plates, for instance. It just isn't there. Very few, if any, people die from that. But yet we have these, you know, automatic dishwashers. It costs a ton of money to run, you know, it has to heat up the water, superheats the water, and really steams things, and I'm sure it gets your stuff very clean, but number one, is it needed? Number two, is it any good? And frankly, I don't think it is. I know there, but see, there's plenty of people who say, oh no, I want that! You know, and we'll even come up with studies that say you're a happier person, you know, you get less foot rot on average if you have a automatic dishwasher than if you don't, you know, if you do your dishes by hand. We can come with all kinds of justifications. They might not make any sense. You know, what does foot rot have to do with automatic dishwashers? Nothing. But it's just funny that the numbers came out that way. And we can use that as research now to justify why people should be spending all that money on this stuff. Anyway, so just like that. That's why government number one, A, doesn't work very well. I mean, it's there, it's doing all the things government is supposed to do, but when you get right down to it, why did we revolt against England? Why did we found this country in the first place? You can go back and look, and you go, is what we have now still accomplishing what we originally set out to do? Freedom, liberty, not to be ruled over by people who are far away, you know, not to be treated like cattle. Ooh, I shouldn't bring that up because that's exactly how we're treated now. The revolution was lost. The government that was founded is gone. I don't know what we're fighting for now. I really don't know what it's all about. I challenge anybody else to mention what it's all about. Why should I live in the United States as opposed to England or France or anything like that? Putting aside cultural or language differences, which really aren't very big at all. What does our government give us better than any other government gives their people? Why? Why should we choose our government over somebody else's? And I think the answer is, what's the difference? I was born here. It's convenient just to stay here. You know, that's in marketing, that's when something has become a commodity. You know, when you have a commodity, people just shrug. Whatever is the simplest thing to get, whatever has the lowest shipping cost, you know, whatever's on sale that week is what you end up buying. You know, one product is not better than another, and that's what we have now. It's kind of I was born in the United States, I don't hate it so much that I want to leave. I don't like it so much that I'll do anything to stay. You know? People say, oh, you just don't understand how it is in other countries, Jay. You just don't get it. Other countries are horrible. It's horrible. Deplorable. You go, some are, but, you know, other countries have better immigration numbers than we do. You know? At least countries that haven't decided to close their borders completely and say, no, we're not taking any more new people, unless they're refugees or something. America's like that. You know? The America brand, although people still say, oh yeah, I'd love to go to America, you know, it's mostly about getting rich and fat and scabby if they want to come here. This is the place where you can lie, steal, cheat, rob, and really get ahead. Perhaps a couple of, you can earn more money here being that way than you could being a liar, cheater, stealer, you know, in a place like, say, England. You know, it's always better to go for a younger country, because in a younger country, the positions of permanent power have not yet been filled. You know, and that was what America basically was. If you were excited about all the exciting things going on in America, it was because there was still a scrabble for people looking for the permanent positions of power and influence and, you know, lifelong, extremely high pension plan. That was what that place was. Anyway, so, there you go. So it just goes like this. You know, why do people choose America? Why? Because they were born here, and because they're not so upset about how things are going that they've chosen to leave yet. That's, you know, that's why things that become commodities go downhill. Every single thing goes downhill. Energetic companies with innovation going on and trying to make something bigger, better, and make it nicer, they've abandoned that market. It's gone, you know. It's like any other commodity, you know, canned peas. Everybody knows that canned peas are nasty by nature. Nobody puts out a better canned pea, because what's the point? People will buy garbage just as readily as they'll buy the good stuff, so they just stop bothering to try to find good stuff. Trying to find good stuff costs more money. You know, you have to pick through the peas and try to get the really good ones, you know, or you kind of focus on younger peas that are maybe a little more tender, a little more flavorful, perhaps. And at a certain point, you just stop doing that, and you say, you know what, it doesn't matter. This is people just want frozen peas. And that's kind of what America and all the rest of the countries have done. You know, things are very stable here. There isn't a whole bunch of bad countries and then all of a sudden one or two really good ones that everybody wants to get to. Nobody wants to do that now. You don't see Germans wanting to come to the United States because it's so it's so wonderful here. By and large, they don't mind staying where they are. Is it corrupt? Is it, you know, have a bunch of nasty people, you know, it doesn't have any more nasty people than we do, per capita. You know? That's why you don't see people from other countries, or at least other developed countries, you can't compare everything, scrabbling to get to the United States. Some you do, some are obviously inferior. But so far there's many countries you could go to. You know, you could go to England, you could go to Germany, you could go to France. Go to any of the Scandinavian countries. Estonia is especially good nowadays. For just a place that seems to be going well. Says, but, you know, we're in the land of nation commoditization. Nobody's really broken out and said, hey, here's something new, here's something different. selling itself that way. Nobody does that anymore. You know, everybody's starting to unify, you know. That's what's obvious when it comes to talking about the worldwide mortgage bailout plan. Everybody's doing the same thing, pretty much. There's a tiny bit of variation here and there. Most of that variation comes with trying to please one interest group or another. You know, some people want to cater to a certain interest group, and so they're throwing some bailout money especially at them. But that's basically the answer. It's a commodity now. You know, I like Del Monte peas more than I like Hunt's peas. I don't think Hunt's makes peas. But, you know, you don't see that anymore. You know, it used to be the old days. People always used to talk, I know, in the old days about brand loyalty. And they used to talk about in the way of things like peas and stuff like that, you know. We want to have the best peas, and we want everybody to, when they think peas, they'll think Del Monte or something. And it's like, what? Or Green Giant or something like that. You know, you had a brand name, you built it up, people liked you because they liked your peas better. And they found out it all, you know, comes out of the same dang factory. They just put different labels on it. You know, premium canned peas. And it's like, what's the difference between premium and the regular one? You go, a label. Oh, well, whatever. Anyway, so, there it is. You know, back in the days when there was brand loyalty, you could say the same thing about that. I'm great. I'm glad to be an American. I'm grateful to be British because we're better than they are, and they might even come up with a couple of indicators or a couple of reasons why they were better. You know, we have a better healthcare system than they do. That's what it's ultimately become. But you have to understand that countries also have this wonderful thing about the fact that people are pretty complacent. They'll pretty much allow things to happen. They'll pretty much stay where they are to a certain degree. You know, people always say, but there's people are so mobile now. And you go, not really. Because they do move around a little bit, but it isn't a lot. Certainly rarely move between countries. Only rich people move between countries. Poor people don't tend to do that. At least not in an acceptable or legal way. You know, people keep saying, but we need to have brand loyalty. We need to put America first. America's great. America's great. And you go, okay, give me a few reasons why we should do that. Why I shouldn't just say, you know what, I'm living here, but I don't want to be called an American anymore. Because I'm embarrassed by what my government does. I'm embarrassed by what we've become. I weep at the fact that I am, you know, that I live in this country that started out with such great hopes and aspirations, such great possibilities, and they've been so immediately raped. And that what Europe had for kings and archbishops and stuff like that, we have in the United States, they just have different titles. You know? And it doesn't matter if there's elections all the time. Gotten to the point to where elections turn out the way the powerful want them to turn out. You know, you don't have to pander to groups anymore. You don't really have to do it. Because it doesn't matter whose face is there. They're not going to do anything. You know, it doesn't matter if your best friend next door gets into Congress. He will, A, either find out that he's this one lone wolf man of this group, and even if he wanted to do something, nobody's going to let him. Or he'll get corrupted by the system, and he'll become just like everybody else. He'll fall, you know. I came to change Washington, Washington changed me. Da 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 da. And it's like, you know, because it doesn't matter. So what do? You abandon it. Like that washing machine that just doesn't get clothes clean. It doesn't matter how many gizmos and doodads and different adjustments. It doesn't matter how many times you paint the outside of it red or blue. It does not change the fact that it doesn't make clothes clean. It doesn't do what you originally got the washing machine to do. Do you understand that you originally, I mean, you aren't a product of government. Government could be a product of you. Or it's supposed to be. It was. At some point, a bunch of people got together and said, hey, let's work together on a few things of mutual interest. And what sprang from that was the governments that we have today. Or no. What we had hoped had happened, that's not how power had been taken. That's not how it worked. How power was taken was the rich and powerful people in the United States wanted to have their own, you know, wanted to decide their own richness and fate. They didn't want to, you know, be beholden to Britain anymore. So what did they do? They decided that they would run their own country. I'm not saying all of them were like this, but that's what got most people interested in doing this. A unique group of people were assembled or came together at the founding of the United States. And they came up with some pretty highfalutin sounding things. But when it came down to it, what they built was exactly what they'd come from. Corrupt places taking advantage of people. They just took it down a notch. Instead of a big, huge empire that was taking advantage of, the United States just took advantage of 13 colonies. You know, if we're going to have tyrants and overlords that enslave and rule over us, at least we want to make sure that our tyrant wears an American flag on his lapel pin. And not a British one. Then we can cheer and say, hip, hip, hooray, we're free, but what did you get free of? And the only answer is you didn't get free of anything. Because you thought it was tied up in a place. You thought it was tied up in a name, in a nation. We are free of Britain. But when we got free of Britain, what happened? We got enslaved by Americans. What a marvelous thing. So the whole problem is, you know, so when I talk about true liberty, what I'm hoping for is that the next time that we revolt against something, or we decide, hey, we're going in a different direction, what are you going to do about it? Says, of course, they're going to act like the British. You know, you can't just walk away. You're our slaves. Come back here. You can't just break away. We're united. You go, who's we? I'm not united with you. Do we have anything in common? You go, well, we need to work together. And you go, why? Against what? Or for what reason? You know, don't give me a bunch of against things. You know, we have to stay big so we can save ourselves from those evil French. Those French are going to come and take us over one by one if we don't come band together. And you go, you know what? No, they're not. Why? Because they don't do that anymore. They're not interested. They don't have to anymore. There's 20 different other ways to enslave people that's much more lasting and much more satisfying than fighting a war with them and making them part of your country. You know, territorialism. Taking over and expanding your territory. You know, you can do it through commerce. That's how the United States has basically gulled and cullied everybody into doing things their way. And they say, hey, you know, if you don't do it our way, we're going to pull the plug on some project or another. And they go, oh, no, don't do that. We need you. Every single war that got fought was primarily a power grab. When we went into before we went into World War I, England was an empire. It was this huge, massive thing. They had long since left us alone, and we didn't care. We were just happy being Americans, I guess. At least our government was. Well, after World War I, after we saved France and Britain's butts from the Germans, you know, then all of a sudden the power shifted. And let me tell you, America made demands. Didn't make many demands at all. But made a few demands. Number one, we were, you know, one of the big things of the whole wars from that time period, especially just before World War I, was that we were driving out colonial powers from America. America belonged to us. That was what they said. You know, people said Teddy Roosevelt carried a big stick. And his big stick was that America, you know, we were astride the entire North and South American continent. And it belonged to us, and we were going to drive out all those imperial people. We were going to set up little governments, and we were hoping they were going to be puppet governments. We wanted to make nice treaties with them that where we were the larger state than they were, that would give us some power. Well, that wasn't good enough in 1910s during the World War I, it was a fantastic time to intercede in Europe and essentially start taking over Europe. Actually, I think the biggest thing that we won from World War I was probably cleaning out the last vestiges of Germany from the South Pacific, which was the next place that we were wanting to have influence over. I don't care what President Wilson was all about. I don't think that was pointless. I think he found out just how pointless he was. And he tried to create the League of Nations, and he just saw it just kind of disintegrate right out from under him. Because powerful people like war. War lets them accomplish something. You know, the fact that the United States now sits astride a majority of the world. Sorry, I'm eating a very juicy peach. Our only real challenger, and they're kind of a pathetic one, is Russia. China doesn't challenge us. which is buying up all of our assets. China is making some strategic deals with some of our former friends. And we find out that countries really don't matter. You know? It's becoming more of a larger issue. You know, the real power isn't really in the United States anymore. It's invested in larger entities. If you think that constitutes the UN, you're nuts. The UN is just as powerless as the organization before it. Only small pissant countries, appeal to the UN. You don't see the United Nations taking these things to the UN. UN is a tool to use to justify what we're doing. The Iraq War was one of the many justifications for the Iraq War was engineered through the UN, not by it, but through it. America wanted to invade Iraq bad. Mostly because Saddam Hussein used to be one of our stooges and he turned on us. If you've seen an American election, for instance, and you find out how nasty everybody gets toward the end, you'd think that these guys would pull out guns and start shooting at each other. And they'd start raping and pillaging their family just to make them back down and let the other guy be the president. It should look very much like what was done to try and make Saddam Hussein look bad. It was like Saddam Hussein was running for some kind of office in the United States, and the opposite side was doing a smear job on him, which is what led up to the Iraq War, was a smear job. You know, he did this and this atrocity. Of course, we would never bring up the kind of atrocities Americans have done. You know, or our government, in our name, have done. We've killed plenty of people. We've done unspeakable things. Abu Ghraib was a despicable thing that we did. Government was not going to tell us that happened. That was to be kept a secret. Once it got out, we fessed up. But the government wasn't going to tell you if it didn't come out. You know, they weren't going to say, "Oh yeah, incidentally, we ran a prison in Iraq and did all kinds of unspeakable things to them." You know? We're not gonna do that. Anyway, so. Okay, Peach. Peach prices were kind of high, but I needed some fruit. Don't want to get scurvy. Alright. And you go, "Oh, but these things were necessary." And you go, "What?" You go, "Is this what we fought for?" You know, people always bring up the whole fact, you know, our veterans went out and killed themselves. You know, when you go back, you talk about World War II, for instance, which for this generation, at least, was our noblest war. you know, we were unfairly attacked. We weren't doing anything except inciting everybody to go to war with us. You know, to attack us, because we weren't going to let them just get away with things. You know, our noble people, our noble warriors, people who are in the army and the armed forces, they bled and died for America. And you're going, did they? Did they bleed and die for America? What America did doing that give us? Oh, well, you didn't get captured by the Japanese. And you go, well, honestly, if we had been captured by the Japanese, chances are they would have left most of our political institutions in place as long as they were on top and getting the tax money they wanted. That's mostly what we did to Japan. That's what Japan would have done to us. You know, Fax says, oh, well, we've never lost a war. And you go, we've lost plenty. We've lost plenty of people. This nation was supposed to be about people. We weren't going to treat people like cattle. But yet, what happens now? Well, we do. What do we hear every day? Body counts. This is how many people die. You know, do you hear their names? Do you hear the fact that we're trying to stop the war so that guy can come home from Iraq and spend time with his wife and his kids and raise his family and go and find a good job? No, we don't ever talk about that. We talk about body counts. And then we talk about how wonderful it is that this guy sacrificed his life for what? America? How could he be sacrificing his life for America? He's not even here. He's in some foreign country that never invaded us. He's not, you know, fighting back some horrible aggressor that wants to come in and take over our country. Nobody had any impression that that's what Japan was trying to do. Even World War II, the act that finally did the wonderful thing of getting us involved in World War II, it wasn't an act of invasion. We were not being invaded. Japan was not coming to take over our country. It's never their intent. I don't think anybody on our side ever thought they were going to try to do this. It wasn't on anybody's radar screen. Then it became a war. It wasn't a war fought on the soil of either country until the very end. You know, Japanese would have been smart in World War II. They would have bombed Los Angeles. They would have bombed San Francisco or Seattle or something like that. Some target they could actually hit. I think they bombed really weird locations of Alaska. But that really doesn't, you know, so? They were mostly military bases. Weren't any civilian targets. You know, Japan could have very easily seen our thrust into Hawaii, which was only like 50 years old, our 50-year-old thrust in taking Hawaii, you know, getting ready to make Hawaii a state, so that it couldn't break away. So we would feel even more inclined that the Japanese were stabbing in our heart. And you go, they weren't stabbing in our heart. It's more like they took a pin and pricked our toe. I don't want Hawaiians to think they aren't important. I says, but this is not an attack. You know, this isn't an invasion on the United States. These guys did not invade for for the intent to take, keep, and hold. That wasn't their intent at all. I don't think they had drawn up any plans about how they were going to invade the United States, which cities they were going to take first, and how they planned on spreading their invasion. That wasn't part of anything. What it was, I don't know what it was. I think we were screwing up what they were trying to do in the South Pacific. We had some territories in the South Pacific, not very many, but we considered the place ours. You know, our territory between the French and the British and the United States, all that territory was ours. We should have had a war between us and Britain and us and France over domination of the South Pacific, because that's the way it was. That's who basically owned stuff down there. Japan wasn't getting aggressive on us. They were getting aggressive on the Chinese. They were invading and marching on China. Manchuria had already been taken. And we may have had a Japan that was taking over China, as opposed to the communist country we ultimately got. Gee, maybe we should have just let Japan do what Japan wanted to do. Of course, we were over there fighting to liberate China, you know, the Republic of China, the capitalist version of it, the one that existed before the war with Japan. We were over there fighting them. We were basically fighting Chinese long before. Japan just decided to make a direct attack on us instead of the indirect war that was already being fought, where the U.S. was backing Chinese nationalist forces. Anyway, so there's, you know, I'll see, you know, when you're saying, oh, but we're such good people, and you go, you know, that's a fantasy that you've manufactured in your head. You might be a good person. Your neighbor might be a good person. I might be a good person. But that doesn't translate into what our government, in the name of America, of the United States of America, that doesn't translate into what they're doing. They're doing deplorable, despicable, hideous things. And it's like they're charging up a good bill on your credit card, you know. When you go overseas, for instance, if you've ever traveled internationally, you know, you go up to the counter and you hand over the passport. And they say, oh, American. You know, and they give you that look. See, and you're being treated as if everything your government's ever done, every single thing any American's ever done to that person, any propaganda that's been put out that says that that America's good or bad or anything like that, it's all dumped on you. And you can try to say, hey, I didn't do that. You know, that wasn't me, all you want to. And you may be able to get away with it if you came from a dictatorship or a monarchy where you could say, hey, that was King What's-His-Name. That has nothing to do with me. You might be able to get away with it that way, but you have to understand, you live in a democratic republic. That means individual people are to blame for what happens. Individual people are responsible because you let it happen. As a collective, not as individuals, but you know, nobody has to see it that way. Democracy is a horrible two-edged sword. Not only is each individual able to affect government, quote unquote, which really isn't true now anymore. We are not a democratic republic. And it isn't because we dropped that form of government, it's because that form of government's been hijacked, gerrymandered. Gerrymandered. It's been made ineffectual. We can now reapportion seats, we can now change things so that we can force certain groups to gather into voting blocks that we can rely upon. We can work really hard to make sure the opinions and the votes of individual people are superfluous. They don't matter. Red state, green state, red district, blue district, blue states. You know, on a larger scale, these things become reliable. You can depend on them. If you're a Democrat and you're in such and such a district of such and such a state, Democrats get elected in that state, unless you really just piss off those people. And there's a really easy way not to piss them off. It goes back to the power of an individual, even an individual congressman or even a president. An individual has no power. The power is put into a weird system of district of redistricted fun. Every 10 years in the United States, you get to redraw the maps of districts. They put in laws to make sure you can't gerrymander, sort of. Still basically happens. You know, people don't often learn this anymore. In schools, I'm sure it's not taught. Or if it is, nobody really understands it. Gerrymandering was the process of creating real snaky, weird, twisty-looking districts that would take in a neighborhood here, a neighborhood over there, this and this and this. You see cities doing it all the time in trying to get more money for themselves or stuff like that. You notice why cities are all kind of strung out funny and, you know, and they've got really long little tentacles here and there. That's a form of gerrymandering. You know, they come up with rules and say, well, you really have to have one neighborhood connect to the next neighborhood to connect to the next one. Therefore, you know, it can't be of this shape, or you can't pull it this thin. So you have to bring in all these people. And basically we found out that gerrymandering still works. You just have to abide by the rules of it, which is, you know, it's convoluted, it's hard. You know, you can get a couple of thousand people who are really good at this, and they can make lots and lots of money every 10 years. Making this stuff happen, you know, and the whole point is you hire those people to make sure that your party has a distinct advantage all the time. You know, I can guarantee you that this district will belong to Republicans and Democrats, or will belong to a Republican or a Democrat, a party. And when you have that district, well, there it is, you know. Gee, it doesn't matter what the individual people do, because you'd have to have a lot of individuals choose to go a different direction. And by and large, you don't have that, unless everybody empties out and a whole bunch of new people come in. That happens on occasion, but it's rare. So rare that it's it's manageable too. So. But America still has that stigma, and it's untrue. America's not like this at all anymore, of being a free place. The brand still looks good, even though it's the same crappy peas that you could get in a generic label. Same basic government, too. Just slap a white label on there and stamp on black and blocky, stupid-looking letters, government. And, you know, it's the same kind of government you would get in Britain, same kind of government you'd get in, you know, any of the Slavic nations. Same government you'll get in the United States or any of its little, you know, its little standby nations. Any of that stuff. Do you notice how interesting it is that when, take our occupation of Iraq, for instance. If you don't like me using the name, the word occupation, call it whatever you want to. The flower party that we're doing in Iraq for our Iraqi friends. There you go, that sounds better. Don't you find it funny that even when we control the entire process of the rebuilding of their nation, we didn't build it to look like ours. It doesn't look like ours. They don't have a House of Representatives in the Congress. They have a prime minister, and they have a figurehead president, which is just a figurehead. He doesn't really do anything. He has no power. You know, there's a prime minister chosen by their parliament. And you're going, this sounds a whole lot more like British government. And you're going, ah, you stumbled on it. It is. That's the generic government. Ours is almost exactly like it, just some of the names are different. And we have some other rules that are just holdovers from a weird small period of time when we wanted to be totally different from Britain because they were our evil overlords. We didn't like them. But you notice now, we don't create governments. We, America, our government doesn't create governments in our image. We create governments according to the British imperial model. Why is that? Don't you think that's funny? How come they weren't set up more like we do? Because we don't like our government. Our government doesn't like the way we have to do things. We don't even like our constitution. When we set up new constitutions, it is not basically a copy of ours. It's a whole different animal. We don't want people to have our constitution. Our government doesn't want to give other countries our constitution. When we talk about exporting democracy, that that's our greatest export, that's the biggest load of hot horse tucky in the whole world. If we were trying to export what we have to other people, their governments would look like our government. But they don't. I wonder why. I wonder why the Iraqi constitution isn't basically a copy of our constitution with maybe some name changes. Why is that? Because our government doesn't like the Constitution. Our government doesn't like our form of government. It doesn't like it. We would like, it would like something else. Our Constitution, the government that was set up according to the Constitution, is some kind of throwback. The fact that we still have it all just means the government doesn't want to go through the effort of throwing it out. You know, there would be some. Now they've been testing it. They've been seeing that most of the Most people don't care about having the Constitution anymore, particularly. It doesn't matter to them, you know. Probably because our corrupt government formed just as readily as every corrupt government in every other developed nation of the world. You know, it wasn't like there was some big, wow, boy, this is really a whole lot better. It isn't. It produces the same result. Corruption, you know, powerful preying upon the weak, you know. The fact that the weak can vote for representation in what passes for government has been found to be pointless. It's just as able to be manipulated by the powerful as a monarchy was. We didn't get rid of monarchies because it didn't work. We got rid of monarchies because it's not the fad anymore. If there was a really great guy, we'd probably make him king if we had the chance. You know? If some really smart guy could come in and say, I can solve this whole problem, but I need ultimate power, chances are we would give it to them. We would actually vote not to follow the Constitution anymore. And that's because it doesn't mean anything to us. It doesn't mean anything to our government. Our government worked hard to ignore it. You know, the few parts of it mostly are election laws and the actual structure of government that we've had to keep because we just can't seem to, you know, because there's no reason to change it. You can corrupt our present form of government just as well as any other. Why, you know, the only thing that would sell government on a different form of government would be one that made their job in enslaving the population and making it do their will easier. That's not going to go over well, so they stick to what they have. Because it works nearly as well. Why go through all the pain of trying to do something that probably won't give you a great benefit? And I think that's also why there's no revolution coming up. Because if we revolt against this government, will the next government be much better? How would you change things? How would you change things to affect the next government? You know, how would it be done? That's a good question. I don't know. What thing would you change? Anyway, well, this is Jay Nevro. You're listening to Life Autistic. I don't know what this one was about. Abandoning America because America's not worth hanging on to. If your washing machine doesn't make your clothes clean, why hang on to it? This is Jay Nevro. You're listening to Life Autistic, episode number 703. If you'd like to contact me, the email address is autism, AUTISM, at Quix, QUIX, .US. And I'm just getting to a town. I need to go ahead and just get this thing down. Have a great day.